Do you find yourself searching for true crime podcasts that are different from what you're always recommended? Do you want to make a real difference in the cases that you're following? Well, you're a crime junkie. And I'm Ashley Flowers, the creator and host of the number one true crime podcast, Crime Junkie. There are hundreds of episodes already available, and each Monday we dive into the details of cases spanning from some of the most infamous to those that you have never heard covered before. Listen to Crime Junkie podcast now, wherever you're listening. Love is more than a day on the calendar or a sign-off on a letter. Love starts with you. Show off your personal style with new Pandora jewelry pieces that radiate with your love from every angle. With Pandora's vast selection of rings, bracelets, earrings, necklaces, and charms, there's endless ways to show what's in your heart. Write a love note to yourself or your best friend with handwritten charms or a personal engraving. Shop now at Pandora.net. Pandora, be love.
Stay connected this winter with this unbeatable deal from Breezeline. Get reliable, fiber-powered internet for just $19.99 per month with all-in pricing for 2 years. But that's not all. Your first month is on us. This deal gets better with a free modem and installation, along with free Wi-Fi your way whole home coverage. Safeguard your network from cyber threats and keep all your devices connected and secured with this amazing offer. Act now. Terms and conditions apply. Offer expires March 3rd, 2024. Learn more at Breezeline.com.
Our card this week is Kimberly Raymer, the Six of Clubs from Florida. In 1997, 17-year-old Kimberly had big goals of getting out of her small town. She made great grades, was a star athlete, and was well-liked by her peers. Heading into her senior year, she already had plans to go to college to become a physical therapist. And there was no question, she had the brains and the talent to do just that. It would take a thief, a monster in the middle of the night, to take that away from her. And that's exactly what happened one August evening. And her mother thinks she knows the true identity of this so far untraceable culprit. I'm Ashley Flowers, and this is The Deck. Kenny Raymer hadn't seen his daughter, Kimberly, who goes by Kim, all weekend. But that wasn't too weird. It was summertime, school was out. Kim was a teenager heading into her senior year at Opp High School in Alabama. She was independent and responsible enough to just do her own thing. Plus, Kenny would often spend the night over at his girlfriend's place. But usually their paths would cross at least once around the house. But that hadn't happened this particular weekend. After sleeping over at his girlfriend's, he had gone back to the house at some point Saturday, August 16th, to grab his golf clubs before heading out to play. Kim's car was there, but she was nowhere to be found. Then it hit him. She was supposed to sell magazines for a school fundraiser with her friend. That friend had probably scooped Kim up and they were out and about doing that. So Kenny left a note on the table and went about his day, not thinking much of it. But when he returned home later that night, the note was right there where he'd left it. No explanation scribbled back in return, and Kim's car was still in the driveway. If she wasn't home yet, she probably decided to sleep over with that friend, or maybe she ended up back over at her mom's house for the night. See, Kenny was divorced, but they had an amicable relationship. Their two daughters would go back and forth and stay wherever was most convenient. Kenny lived in Opp, Alabama, and Sue had moved 30 minutes away across the state line in Dafuniac Springs, Florida. They didn't want Kim to have to transfer school since she was doing so well, so she would mostly stay with her dad in Opp during the academic year, visiting her mom on like evenings, weekends, and breaks. So Kenny gave Sue a quick call that night to try and check, see if Kim was there, but he got no answer, so he just went to sleep, thinking all of this would be cleared up by morning. But when the sun rose, there was still no Kim. Instead of simply peeking into her bedroom and calling out to her as he had done before, something compelled him to take a closer look at everything. And when he did, he immediately knew something wasn't right. All of Kim's stuff was there, her purse, her shoes, and something she wouldn't, more like couldn't, go without, her contact lenses. They were in their case and her glasses were on the nightstand, and Kim was nearly blind without them. But that wasn't even the most troublesome part.
The pictures were down on the inside of her room and on the other side of the wall, which was the hallway, and they were down. And then there was a pillow behind her headboard. And I thought, somebody had to have been thrown into the wall or something for all these pictures to be off the wall like that. You know, some kind of force.
That was Sue, Kim's mom. Early on the morning of Sunday, August 17th, Kenny tried calling Sue again. And he tried to convince himself of all the ways this could end up being fine. Maybe Kim had just put in a pair of new contacts. Maybe she didn't need her purse. So he called Sue again. And this time when he rang, she picked up.
He said, "Is Kimberly with you?" And I said, "Well, no, she's supposed to be with you." And he says, "Well, she's not here. We can't find her." I said, "What do you mean you can't find her?" I said, "I'm coming up there." And so I got my stuff and went on up there.
Sue and her oldest daughter, Kim's 18-year-old sister, Kristen, rushed to Op to help Kenny try and sort all of this out. Her dad had been frantically calling all of Kim's friends in the meantime to make sure she wasn't just hanging out with one of them, but none of them had been with her since Friday night. With it seeming like the worst-case scenario was now their terrifying reality, the family notified the Op Police Department that Sunday to report Kim missing. Despite the strange scene in her bedroom, it didn't seem like law enforcement suspected foul play, at least not right off the bat. Maybe because there was no obvious signs of forced entry, nothing stolen from the house, and nothing else seemed off upon initial inspection. So local police started trying to pinpoint all of Kim's movements that weekend. Here's investigator Steve Sunday. He's retired now, but like a lot of detectives we interview for this show, he came back on a part-time basis to work cold cases at the Walton County, Florida Sheriff's Office.
She had attended a softball game at one of the local parks in Op, and she played in this ball game. And I believe around 10:30 or so, the ball game ended, and Kim stayed around with her friends a little bit, but then she went home. Her father was there. He was getting ready to go out. Kim had asked about going with some of her friends. He gave her about 11:30 curfew and said, "Be home by that time." And Kim ultimately got dressed and left.
Even though Kenny wasn't home that night to enforce her curfew, he didn't think twice about it. Kim had never been in trouble for breaking curfew before. Actually, she had never really been in big trouble with her parents at all.
She was good in school, made great grades. She was responsible, but, you know, at the same time, she's a teenage girl, and she has her own mind of things that she wants to do.
Kenny didn't know which friends Kim was planning on hanging out with that night. He never asked, and Kim never specified. His last interaction with her, however, was vivid in his mind. According to reporting in the Dothan Eagle, that Friday night after the game, but before she left to go hang out with friends, Kim had put her arms around his neck, kissed him on the cheek, and said, "I love you, Dad." At this stage, her family had made contact with Kim's friends, who confirmed that she had never showed up to participate in that school fundraiser on Saturday. The friend she had made plans with had even stopped by her house to pick her up, but she gave up when no one answered the door. Call after call, as some of Kim's closest girlfriends began to realize she was missing, they gathered at Kenny's house, trying to help her parents figure out where she was. Now everyone was on edge. This was a scary situation. But actually, this one friend in particular seemed off when she got there, almost uncomfortable. Knowing this was serious, I mean, the police were now involved, she told Sue that there was something she needed to come clean about, something Kim had been keeping from her entire family. Have you ever had a feeling that someone wasn't being fully truthful with you? When you need to do a gut check because you're pretty sure something isn't adding up about someone's past, you should turn to TruthFinder. Whether it's a creepy neighbor or a random phone number that keeps calling you, TruthFinder has you covered. You can search for people by phone number, address, name, email, and more. TruthFinder can be especially helpful for running confidential background checks on anyone you're planning to meet from online dating apps. If you're on a dating app, you need to be on TruthFinder too. TruthFinder helps you identify potential threats so you can avoid them and protect yourself. Millions of people use TruthFinder to find out about people in their communities. If you've got questions about someone, you need to try TruthFinder. Go to truthfinder.com/thedeck for a special The Deck offer. That's truthfinder.com/thedeck to access your special offer today.
Busy parents have enough on their plates without adding your children's homework to the list as well. IXL is an excellent resource for homework help, which is especially nice for parents who are rusty on school info themselves. And methods have changed over the years, too. IXL Learning is an online learning program for kids. It covers math, language arts, science, and social studies. It's designed to help them really understand and master topics in a fun way with positive feedback. And you get one site for all the kids in your home, pre-K to 12th grade. There's a reason why IXL is used in 95 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Backed by research, kids using IXL are scoring higher on tests. From studies done in almost every state in the country, the kids who had IXL are consistently doing better. If your child is struggling, this is the smartest investment you can make. A month of IXL costs less than an hour of tutoring, so now you could get your child the help they need at an affordable price. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And the Deck listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/deck. Visit IXL.com/deck to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
This friend told Sue that Kim had a boyfriend, an older boyfriend, and that's who she'd been hanging out with Friday night. While most of her friends seemed to know about this guy, Kim hadn't told anyone in her family, knowing that they wouldn't approve. This guy was out of school in his 20s, was either separated or divorced from his wife, and had a kid or two of his own. He lived right down the road from Kenny's house, like less than 5 minutes or so, and that's where Kim had gone after she had left her house that evening. So the family immediately did what I would do. They showed up at this guy's house unannounced, but no one was there. Not too long after that first attempt, though, police ended up catching up with this guy. He was surprised to see them, but immediately forthcoming about his relationship with Kim, saying it had only been going on for about 2 weeks or so. I mean, it wasn't very serious. But he was nonetheless distraught to learn that she was missing. He cooperated fully with police, answered all of their questions, and allowed them to look around and even search his place. He told investigators that the two of them hung out, watched television for an hour or so, and Kim left between 11:30 and 11:45 to get home around the curfew that her dad had given her. Sue even talked to him herself and said that he seemed scared to death, but willing to do whatever he could to help. And for Sue and investigators, that was a good sign. Sue got the impression that he was telling the truth, despite how bad it may have looked at first. Within days, the Alabama Bureau of Investigation, along with the FBI, were called in. And they seemed to kick things into high gear, taking lead on the case. They interviewed neighbors, they interviewed Kim's friends, and of course, the boyfriend. But they didn't learn anything new. No one else was sticking out as suspicious, and no one could think of a single person who'd want to hurt Kim. And there wasn't much in the way of physical evidence either. But Sue thinks that's because police didn't bother to collect any at first. Sue remembered that first day of the investigation, police dusted for fingerprints back at the house on the doorknob of Kim's bedroom. But outside of this, she said, the handling of the crime scene was basically non-existent. I guess local police weren't really considering it much of a crime scene, because in their minds, there was nothing telling them it was.
I don't believe there was anything that anyone heard, any screaming or anything like that. So whatever happened to her happened without people seeing anything there at the house where someone would call the police or say something, you know, hey, something's going on. nothing like that happened.
Sue did her best to preserve what she could, knowing in her heart Kim's room was going to be important. But it was already too little too late. Sue said everyone had been in and out of the house those first few days. I mean, nothing had been roped off. Even Kristen's boyfriend had wandered into Kim's bedroom while Sue was taking a look around.
I went into Kim's bedroom and he was right behind me. And he was just looking. And I said, just don't touch anything in here. You know, I was trying to be like the law. And I told him, I said, don't touch anything. They'll think you might have something to do with it.
Detectives might not have been focused on her room yet, but they were investigating in other ways and making some progress, one tidbit of info at a time. First, from putting up roadblocks around the area to stop and talk with anyone who may have seen something that night. In doing this, a neighbor recounted seeing Kim's car arrive back in the driveway sometime around midnight Saturday morning, meaning she had, in fact, made it home around the time of her curfew. Coupled with her contacts being in their case and the clothes she'd been wearing that night on the floor, it was clear she made it home. She felt safe. She'd gotten ready for bed, and then something had to have happened to her in her room. So this finally sparked investigators to look harder at her bedroom. Agents collected all of her bedding, along with other things around her bedroom and house, including old family videotapes that Sue has never gotten back to this day. They also took the family's landline phone for further examination. Although there were no apparent signs that someone had attempted to clean up anything, the FBI conducted a luminol test in Kim's bedroom, but there were no traces of blood found. And outside of things being a little amiss in the bedroom, nothing else was really seemingly off. But Sue said she had noticed something else strange.
When I went to the house in awe, the first thing I noticed was when I was going in the side door, there was light coming through from the doorknob up. I could see light, and I had never seen that before. It was odd to me.
Sue thinks it's possible that this could have meant someone had tried to force open the locked door to get inside and knocked the door frame off its alignment. But unfortunately, no one could say for certain if the door was already like that or not. Maybe it was just old and broken. Agents did take a closer look, dusting for more fingerprints, examining that door and analyzing the locking mechanism, though what, if anything, they were able to conclude from their testing has never been released to the public. Law enforcement, family, friends, and community members started searching the surrounding areas for any sign of Kim. When our reporter Madison traveled to that area to meet with Sue, she passed people driving ATVs while traveling down dirt roads. It was, then, and still is today, a heavily wooded area. When it had been about a week since anyone had seen Kim, her mom knew deep down that her daughter had not left on her own. And at this point, law enforcement agreed someone else was likely responsible for whatever happened to Kim that night.
You would never thought in Op, Alabama, that anything like that's going to happen because it just didn't happen. Everybody knows everybody. It's a quiet little town. So it had to be somebody that she knew, that we knew, and that made it even scarier.
FBI agents already had someone in mind, someone Sue hadn't even suspected, not even for a second. And apparently, special agents started setting their sights on this person when he was the only one close to the family who was avoiding them. To her utter shock, Sue told our reporting team that FBI agents let her know they were looking into the boyfriend of Kim's older sister, 26-year-old Jerry. Jerry and Kristen had only been dating a few months at this point, and though Sue had never suspected him on her own, once the FBI brought up his name, she realized it might make sense.
I liked him at first. You know, I thought he was okay. Until I saw the other side of him. And then when that happened, I just didn't want no part of him anymore.
Sue isn't just airing assumptions here. Investigators confirmed that he had a violent criminal history dating back to the early 90s that included charges related to assault. But she didn't know any of that until after Kim went missing. It was also after that Sue found out from some of Kim's friends that Kim hadn't liked Jerry. I mean, they didn't have a ton of interaction in the short time Kristen and Jerry dated, but even the limited time she had spent around him, she told her friends he was, quote, creepy. And in hindsight, Sue started reflecting on things that had happened earlier on in the investigation. Some of his behavior that she once thought of as unusual now seemed almost malicious. Like the way he was hovering over her, looking into Kim's room. And apparently at one point early on, he tried to cast suspicion onto her dad, Kenny. You see, Jerry's dad was a deputy for the Walton County Sheriff's Department. And while he didn't work Kim's case, Jerry acted as though he was being fed information. And it was a flat-out lie. Kenny had been quickly cleared and wasn't ever suspected of harming his daughter. And soon after the crime, Jerry also told Sue that he was planning on getting away from the area altogether.
I said, why in the world would you want to leave this area right now? You know, this is not when I thought that he had anything to do with it. And it got me to thinking a little bit. You know, why would you want to leave? It's just weird.
As investigators narrowed in on Jerry, they learned more and more that made him look even worse. He didn't have a solid alibi for early that Saturday morning when they believed Kim was taken from her home. Kristen confirmed that Jerry had left her alone that Friday night while she was babysitting to head to a party in the Leonia, Florida area, even taking her car. But apparently, police found out that when he did finally show up to that party, he was actually in a different vehicle for some unknown reason. It seems that Jerry ditched Kristen's car that night and then ended up stealing a work truck from a former employer. There were accounts of drug use and definitely drinking at this party. At first, some friends who had attended assured police that they were with Jerry the entire time, but when agents went into them a little harder, they admitted they couldn't vouch for his whereabouts after a certain point early that morning. Depending on who you talk to, these exact times varied, though. What we know is that ultimately, early Saturday morning, Jerry showed up at a friend's house where he had left Kristen's car, freaking out, saying that he needed to ditch the work truck that he had stolen ASAP. And he ended up abandoning it at a local church. At some point early on in the search for Kim, a tip got called in from a woman who said she had seen something early that Saturday morning that, in hindsight, now seemed suspicious. A red and white 3/4-ton Dodge truck with dual wheel tires around 5 in the morning in an area about 8 miles outside of Ock. Now, she assumed that the car was broken down and someone needed help, so she drove closer. But when she noticed that there were two men inside, she decided to just mind her own business and kept heading to work for her own safety. Agents made the connection that her report referenced the same distinct truck that Jerry had allegedly stolen that night. But it can never be that easy, right? Detectives didn't make this connection until the truck was already returned to its rightful owner, who already had it professionally detailed. So any forensic testing was a lost cause, but they did try. Even with all of this, Jerry still wouldn't own up to anything. There wasn't enough evidence to even charge him with stealing the truck, and in Kim's case, he invoked his right to remain silent. But that didn't stop Mama Bear Sue from confronting him herself. Since he didn't have a concrete alibi for early Saturday morning, he tried to come up with one, at least for Sue. He told her he was driving around by himself for hours after the party and drove to Lake Cassidy twice, an area known for hangouts and partying. Except no one else was there both times, so no one could corroborate his story.
I was on the phone with him, and I was talking to him, and I said, Jerry, did you go to Op that night? Did you do that? Did you do something to Kim? And then I said something else, and he said, prove it. He told me to prove it on the phone.
Our reporter Madison connected with retired FDLE Special Agent Dennis Haley, who started assisting on this case that very first week Kim went missing in 1997. Today, he's back on it to take a closer look at all of the FBI's files alongside Investigator Sunday. Agent Haley said detectives asked Jerry's former employer for a description of what the truck had looked like when he first got it back after it was stolen, trying to get some insight about what Jerry may have been doing in it that night. Like, was there a reason that he had to get it professionally detailed? Well, this man said that the truck was covered in dirt, The tailgate was missing, and the most remarkable observation, he described muddy footprints up on the inside ceiling of the truck. Now, around this same time, investigators got the phone records back from the landline that was in the Raymer house. And what those records revealed would be one of their biggest breaks ever in this case. If you want to bring coziness into your life, you turn to Barefoot Dreams, especially now as the brand is celebrating their 30th anniversary. I got their robe, blanket, and socks, and I literally slept in the robe and socks last night. They are incredible. And I would have slept with the blanket too, but my cozy Josie knows a good blanket when she finds it, and she actually hijacked it from me. With those 30 years of coziness, Barefoot Dreams celebrates being the originators of everyone's favorite luxe home blanket, Josie included. And while many have attempted to duplicate their blankets, robes, and more, Barefoot Dreams' fabrication and quality cannot be replicated. So don't believe the dupes. For the Deck listeners, you can get 15% off your first purchase at barefootdreams.com with code DECK15. Don't miss out on Barefoot Dreams' soft, soothing fabrics that will bring luxury to your life.
I can remember sitting in my high school Spanish class looking down at the ground, just hoping, desperately hoping, I wouldn't get called on. Because languages have never come easy for me. And even after all those years of studying in school, I felt so insecure. Then as my husband and I started exploring international travel recently, he convinced me that it was time to give language another try. So naturally, we found Rosetta Stone, the most trusted language learning program. It's available on desktop or can be used as an app on your phone or tablet. Rosetta Stone offers 25 languages, and they have a true accent feature that gives you feedback on how well you're pronouncing your words. As my family continues to explore future travel, I know I'm going to take advantage of that because I want to feel as confident and respectful as possible. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, the Deck listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/deck. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/deck today.
Around 5:20 Saturday morning, three phone calls were made from the Raymer's house phone to numbers in Florida. All three of those calls were made out to numbers in the Leonia area. Does that sound familiar? It should, because Leonia was the area where Jerry and his buddies were partying that night. Neither Kim nor her dad Kenny would have had any reason to contact someone there. I mean, they had absolutely no connection to it. But here's the catch. None of the numbers actually went anywhere. Like, it seems one or two digits were off, as if the number was dialed incorrectly. Or, as agents surmise, dialed in a panic. So armed with all of this new evidence, agents started developing a theory. Could all of these things be connected? The stolen truck, the report about the two men near Op in the truck, and the phone calls. It seemed like someone had come to the Raymer house uninvited early that morning, and then the very next day, Kim was gone. And get this, one of the things that had bothered investigators early on was the possible lack of forced entry. But with Jerry, that could be explained.
Kristen and Jerry had lived in that house the month of July. She had a key. And Kristen thinks that he still had that key. And he could have gotten in there that way, or with the door being like that, he could have come to the door and said, "Hey, is Kristen there? I'm looking for her." Because she knew him. She would have let him in.
Plus, Jerry would have known that it was common for Kenny to spend the night out with his girlfriend, common for Kim to be home alone.
I believe that he went up there probably to try to have sex with her. And I think he went in there, and I think that he tried something. Kimberly was very athletic, and I believe that she fought him, and that's probably what happened to those pictures. Something happened in that room, and I was told by another person that he was told that the person of interest did go up there. Something happened in the house, And he was going to put her in the truck and ride her around until she woke up. And she never woke up. And I don't know what they did with her body.
By person of interest, she means Jerry. So Sue was told by someone that they heard this is what happened, that Jerry did something to her in her room that night. And what Sue heard tracks with what investigators told our reporting team, that they've heard rumors. But the problem is, they're just rumors.
I think a lot kind of didn't want to get involved. And then sometimes they would, well, I heard this one said this. And then, you know, then there'd be times you might go to that person. That person might say, well, no, I didn't say that. So it was a lot of hearsay stuff that was out there, but law enforcement had to sift and go through that.
Agent Haley confirmed that the items collected from Kim's bedroom, like the bedding, were sent off for testing, but nothing of evidentiary value came of any of it. So what they had was suspicious, but there was no smoking gun and no body. Not nearly enough to put him behind bars, at least not for this. But within a week or so of Kim going missing, there was a warrant out for Jerry's arrest for another incident. He was wanted for a home invasion and for stealing a motorcycle. And at the time, he was already on probation for something else. Agent Haley thinks he was taken into jail on or around August 23, 1997, on account of these other unrelated charges. And he was eventually sentenced to around 15 years in prison. And though Jerry was the prime suspect in Kim's case at this point, that's it. No charges were filed on that.
It was just not enough. And as long as he maintains his silence, which he has that right to do so, law enforcement can't go any further at that point.
With Jerry in jail and staying tight-lipped, detectives focused their efforts on finding Kim's body.
On these searches, I had to get my mind away. I had a job to do. I didn't think about, I'm not going to find Kim. I just had a job to do to try to find a body. I couldn't think that I was actually searching for my daughter that I might find. I couldn't do it. I just had to break that part away.
Police focused on that area outside of Op, where that woman had spotted the stolen truck that night, thinking it was possible that she may have witnessed Jerry along with an accomplice. The FBI brought in a special plane from D.C. with infrared technology and flew over that area, trying to detect if Kim could be amongst all of that forest and brush. While the plane made it possible to search lots of ground fast, they hadn't even begun to cover all of the rural acreage in the area.
It's like a forest everywhere. There's woods everywhere. There's water everywhere. There's ponds. There's lakes. There's marsh. They had searches over at the Steep Hole. They had divers from New York go in there because somebody had actually called and said she would be there. And this area, the Steep Hole where they were in, sometimes you could go in there, it would be filled up with water. You could go in there a few weeks later and it was empty. They found a piece of carpet in there, I think, but nothing was ever said about that.
That search of the Steep Hole was in May of 1998, and a surplus of other searches ensued after that.
We've had searches everywhere. We've had searches with Coffee County. They were involved. Covington County, Walton County, the FBI. Even had people from Texas that were volunteers that came over with their cadaver dogs.
Haley said Jerry's family owns a lot of land that was also searched several times to no avail, although he noted that there are more than 400 acres, so there's no way for them to cover it all. And none of these searches were turning up any sign of Kim. The most noteworthy, though, seemed to be one that happened in 2001 in an area that investigators said kept showing up in tips. It's an area with a pond called the Baptizing Hole in Holmes County, Florida. That area is about an hour or so away from Op. According to an article published by the Dothan Eagle, four different dogs hit on the same specific area of the pond, indicating human remains. And this implored officials to drain the pond, and they did find something that seemed significant. Not too far from where the dogs hit, close to the middle of the pond, detectives found an engine block with a piece of rope tied to it. And they didn't say this, but at least to me, that kind of sounds like something that could have possibly been used to weigh something or someone down. They recovered what they found, but it doesn't appear that anything ever came from it, as there was nothing to prove if it was actually related to this case in one way or another.
We searched and searched and searched. I searched every weekend for 5 years, trying to find my daughter.
In 2010, Kenny Raymer passed away from cancer, not ever knowing what became of his precious daughter. And then about a year later, Jerry was released from prison. He got out a few years early on those other charges unrelated to Kim's case.
He's living his life. He's alive. He is married. And my daughter's gone. And I don't even know what happened to her. I deserve to know what happened to my daughter.
For years after that, nothing much happened. There was an exciting update in 2021 when the Covington County District Attorney released a statement that there was new evidence in the Raymer case that was presented to a grand jury. D.A. Walt Merrill said to a local journalist at the time, in part, quote, "Per the grand jury's instructions, we will reconvene and present the next phase of evidence we have discovered in the near future. I am confident that we will find justice for Kimberly Raymer. We will not rest until we do," end quote. But since that was a few years ago now, and no other updates have surfaced, it's unclear what, if anything, happened next. But where they left off, it seems possible a reconvening could still happen in the future. What we can say for sure is that Investigator Sunday and Agent Haley are both reviewing the FBI files in an effort to revamp this case. And they're looking back at all of the evidence to see if anything can be retested for DNA using new technology. I try to be optimistic, but I can't help but think, even if they do find something, would it even be admissible in court? Jerry had, according to Sue's own account, been in Kim's bedroom after she went missing, along with the rest of the family, before the FBI collected any evidence. And like she said, he had recently lived in that house. That means it could take someone coming forward as a witness to make the real difference. After all, if there was also an accomplice in the house that night, that person's DNA being present couldn't just be explained away.
Please tell the truth, because we need peace in our life. We need to know what happened to Kimberly, because it is tearing me apart. I mean, it has been hell every single day, because I go over that scenario every single day about my daughter, because she's my daughter. We're going to find out what happened to her. Please, Lord, let us. You know, I pray every day. I get up and go around that pond, and I pray every day, please, God, please let us have some answers. Please let us have some answers. It's been 26 years. I don't know why the answers aren't coming, but I feel like they will.
Agent Haley said since the onset of all of this, the longest time Jerry's ever spent talking to anyone in law enforcement was about 15 minutes while he was in county jail, and even then he wasn't giving them much. Our reporter Madison was able to catch Jerry for less than 2 minutes on his home phone before he hung up. Although our sources confirmed he's still the main suspect in this case, he has not been charged. So for that reason, we wanted to give him a fair opportunity to respond. When Madison called him, Jerry didn't want to discuss Kim's case. He just said that there is nothing to clear up about his name and that he keeps all individuals in prayer. Investigator Sunday surprised us with a final request at the conclusion of his and Madison's interview. He had stayed up late the night before, even called his pastor for guidance. He said he felt compelled to write this note to the one who took Kim. Whoever that may be, he didn't specify a name. He just asked that we air it at the end of this episode. So here it is.
To the one who took Kim, you know who you are. You know what you have done. If you are listening to this podcast, if you are continuing to follow this case, then I hope you will listen and heed to my message to you. you are the last one to have seen Kimberly Lauren Raymer. You are the last one to have heard her very last words. You know where she is. How often do the images of that night return to your memory and haunts you? How often do the sounds of that night ring in your ears? I believe the events of that night you have played and replayed so many times that they are so deeply embedded within the very depths of your mind. Do you still remember the path you took that night? Do you remember how you felt? You may have learned throughout the years to subdue those thoughts and images which seem to creep in. Maybe when you see Kim's picture, or you hear just the name Kim. You may have even asked God to forgive you of this terrible thing you did. And in your mind, you've convinced yourself that God has done so. If this is what you believe, then you have lulled yourself into a false sense of forgiveness, a false sense of security, a false sense of salvation. For as long as Kim is missing, as long as her mother, sister, and friends are hurting, as long as they do not know where she is, your sin remains. But only you can change your eternal destiny. True confession to God means making things right with this family. It's time for you to bring Kim home to her family. Then you can work on the relationship between you and God.
All three of the sources we spoke to for this episode, Investigator Sunday, retired Agent Haley, and Sue, think that there are probably plenty of people out there who have knowledge about what happened to Kim. So if that's you, it's time to talk. And if you did this, it's time to turn yourself in. Just like the message Investigator Sunday puts next to all of Kim's missing posters, you, of all people, should know. There is no enemy too great, no accuser so terrible, as the conscience which dwells within. You can call the Walton County Sheriff's Office at 850-892-8111. You can remain anonymous by calling the Emerald Coast Crime Stoppers at 850-863-TIPS. Or you can submit a tip online at emeraldcoastcrimestoppers.com. The deck will be off next week, but I'll return the following week with a brand new episode. The Deck is an AudioChuck production with theme music by Ryan Lewis. To learn more about The Deck and our advocacy work, visit thedeckpodcast.com. So what do you think, Chuck? Do you approve?
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Hi, it's Martha Stewart. You know, I spend a lot of time thinking about dirt. At 3 a.m., at all hours of the day, really. What people don't know is that not all dirt is the same. You need dirt with the right kind of nutrients. New Miracle-Gro organic raised bed and garden soil is so dense, so full of nutrient-rich, high-quality ingredients. Miracle-Gro is simply the best.